Hi, I'm Anthony.
I'm Anthony's friend Ellie.
And we're stood at the start of the Green Man Ultra. And I'm wondering, how can a mid-pack runner make themselves a better runner? You listen to Runners on Trail, the Trail Run podcast by mid-pack runners for mid-pack runners. And this is episode 23.
Runners on Trail.
So welcome back to Runners on Trail.
This is episode 23.
It is episode 23, being recorded in your beautiful garden with the birds and the bees.
Yes, might be a bit of background noise.
It might be.
And in this episode, we're going to be looking at how to become a better runner. Better is a broad term, obviously, and can involve many facets of running. But we're going to try and explore that, and we're going to try and do that with a couple of people.
Yes, the wonderful Ellie Bates, and we'll get on to Ellie a bit more in a minute. But if you're a Rot listener, you might remember back in 2018, I ran the Squamish 50-50 and was lucky enough to interview Gary Robbins. Doubly honoured to do so, since I've heard recently how few interviews he's done since yes. Barclay 2017. So, yeah, really pleased that he was willing to have a chat with us. And during that chat, we discussed how a runner could make themselves a better runner. So we'll drag that clip into this episode from our archive as well. Now, I met Ellie through work. I started working somewhere literally just as we were starting to train and try and get into Transvulcania. And I sat down and I literally had the desk next to her. And she said, oh, what are you doing this weekend? I think it was when we were off to the Scarfell Pike Trail Marathon. I said, oh, I'm going up to the Scarfell Pike to see this trail marathon. She went, oh, wow. Wow, you know, that sounds brilliant. I said, oh, yeah, I'm trying to get into this race called Transvulcania. She went, Transvulcania, oh my goodness. So she knew all about it. So we bonded at work massively over running. And she's a properly talented runner.
Yes, she is.
She's, you know, an amateur, definitely. She's a full-time worker, not sponsored, not professional in that sense in any way, but clearly very good. She was first woman on the Cotswold Way Challenge a few years ago, which is the 100K version. She's
yes.
third person across the line. And she wins, you know, races. So I was quite excited for her to come up to Bristol and run Green Man. I thought she'd do, had a good chance of doing pretty well in the race. And having run with her in London, it's interesting. I can go running with her and it's fine. We can run together. I will clearly be much more at the top end of my scale than she is, but we've actually managed to go out and have a run together and been quite happy with the quality of the run both of us got at the end of it.
Yes.
Although clearly the level of effort, as I said, for me was slightly higher than it was for her.
I think if I was running with her, I'd be at my utter redlining max.
Yeah, it was an interesting run.
Yeah.
But it had been interesting. I think I ran really well because I was running with someone who was really good and I wanted to run well. I wanted to push myself and didn't have a lot of choice but to push myself when I was running with her. So yeah. We'll get into some of that when we're talking about in a minute what we're going to talk about.
Unfortunately, I've not met Ellie, but I know her through you.
Yes.
I can clearly see her Strava and stuff. So I can see she's a fast runner.
She's very fast, yeah. Her husband's really fast too.
Oh, right.
Both of them sickeningly fast. So she said to me she'd like to come up and run the race. So, yeah, she popped up to Bristol. And where they're coming up, I thought it was an ideal opportunity to think about how someone can become a better runner, someone who's a mid-packer. She's clearly not a mid-packer, but as I said, she's not a professional runner.
Yeah.
She's got herself to where she's got. But, you know, and how does she think mid-packers can make themselves better in whatever shape and form you may think that is? But I guess it means faster.
Yes.
Or better endurance, or achieve better results.
And consistency, maybe,
consistency,
as well.
Yeah. Et cetera. So, very quick bit of context. This February was the wettest February on record.
It was horrendous, wasn't there?
Yeah.
There were storms practically twice a week.
Yeah. And so the course, although the rain had stopped before we started, was fairly moist, I think is the way I'd put it. I'd not been well for about 2 months up to the run with a sort of chest infection-y thing, well before COVID, so but looking back now, it feels a bit weird.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought I'd recovered, but I don't think I really had, and I certainly hadn't really managed to do as much training as I'd liked. But we all set off, and we ran around the course, and I really struggled from about the 15-mile point onwards for the next 30 miles. I didn't have a particularly enjoyable time. I'd started off with the 9-mile pacer, ended up accelerating away from the vehicle because it was just taking a lot of time for people to get through gates and things.
Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't a decision I took. It just happened that way.
Mm.
And then they overtook me about halfway between checkpoint 3 and checkpoint 4. And then the last Ashton Court, if you like, the end of it is 5. But they stopped to take pictures.
So
I ended up catching them up with about 400 yards to go. I'm tanked. And because I'm trying to do the buckle this year, so you can do a winter and a summer, and your combined time determines what colour buckle you get.
Hmm.
So I went past him and he went, "Oh, I can't believe you just run past him." Like, literally every second counts. I've got to run this again in the summer. Yes. And I was already slower. So I crossed the line in 9 hours, 16 minutes, which was 39 minutes slower than I did it the last time, which is a little disappointing.
In the summer.
Yeah, and I'd done it in that summertime before. But as I crossed the line, there's Ellie stood there with, honestly, the trophy's about 2 foot tall. It's a huge trophy.
Fantastic.
And she'd won, which was brilliant. And she was clearly stoked to bits. She'd been paced around by a couple of people, and she thanks them in a clip in a minute. Yeah, but she'd just started from the beginning, hooked up with some people, and they'd had a great run.
So they weren't there to pace her. Was formed up with these people who happened to be running, and they were all the same.
So I bumped into a couple of people who I've met a little bit through the podcast and who were running there on the day, and they know a few of the people. So they pointed out a few people that they thought Ellie might want to try and hang on to at the beginning.
Yes.
So she sort of set off with that group, and then it changed and morphed a little bit as the morning went on. So the day after the race, I sat down with Ellie in my back garden and asked her how she thought a mid-packer can become a better runner. And here's what she had to say.
So it is Sunday the 8th of March, and I'm sat in my back garden with Green Man Ultra winner, Ellie Bates. Congratulations!
Thank you.
How are your legs?
They're all right. They're a bit battered, but they're basically fine.
Mine feel quite tired too. Yeah. How did you find it yesterday?
Yeah, really good. Muddy, but not too muddy, not too hilly, so you could get some good fast miles in. Yeah, good race. Lots of nice people.
Shouts out to anyone?
Shout out to Jack, who basically won the race for me. Thank you, Jack, because you knew where I was going, or where you were going, and I followed you. And also a shout out to a nice man called Neil, who had lived on La Palma, and we had some good chats.
Cool.
Good run.
Yeah. And the weather was really kind to us. It was muddy, and there were some quagmires we were going through, but at least it wasn't raining.
Yes. The weather was very kind to us. Perfect temperatures. Yeah.
So, you clearly are not a mid-pack runner. You are clearly a front-of-pack runner, as evidenced by your result yesterday. And I guess my question to you is, how do you think a mid-packer can make their running better? I'm not saying make themselves into an elite runner, but what things can they do to make themselves a better runner and maybe elevate themselves more towards the front of a pack, do you think?
So, I think being part of a running club is a really good thing to do. I joined a running club not actually to get better at running, but because it's socially good for me. I get to meet people and chat to people who like the same sort of things as me, and that's why I stay there. But it's the only way I'd force myself to do interval training, speed, and it does force you to just try a bit harder, whether you like it or not. So I definitely would recommend joining a club. I'd also recommend just being a bit bolshy and a bit arrogant sometimes and just going, yeah, can totally do this, and just pushing on a little bit more than you think you might naturally do. So I never ever look at the pace on my watch ever, because I just run with how I'm feeling. If I'm feeling good, make hay when the sun shines. If I'm feeling not quite so good, just try and dig in, recoup. I have two kind of like phrases that go through my mind constantly during a long run. One is make hay when the sun shines, i.e. I'm feeling good, let's crack on. And the other one is when the going gets tough, the tough get plodding, i.e. it's hard, just regroup, settle in, don't worry about your pace, just settle in, carry on, one foot in front of the other, and pretty soon it normally evens itself out again.
And your running club, Chiltern...
Chiltern Harriers. Shout out to Chiltern Harriers.
How big a club is it, and what sort of stuff do you do with them?
So we are a really big club, actually. We're an athletics club, and we've got juniors and seniors. So there's about 500 odd of us all together. But the senior section is about half of that, maybe 250. I think there's probably about 100 of us that regularly turn up to training. We'll do hills, we'll do intervals. Quite a lot of our club at the moment are training for spring marathons, and they're following the Hansen's method, which I'm not so into. It involves basically a lot of running, a lot of miles, a lot of getting used to running on tired legs, not many really long runs, lots of speed intervals. So 6 times 800, 4 times a mile, 5 times 1500 or whatever, my maths has gone wrong. I don't so much like that. I find it a bit dull, but just generally, yeah, speed intervals of varying lengths is what we do, I'd say. The odd long run as well, but mostly it's the shorter stuff.
And how often are you running and what sort of mileage are you putting in?
So if I'm training for something, I will do 5 or 6 times a week, of which one of those is a park run, which is entirely fun. So I don't really see that as a proper training session. At least one of them is a recovery run. One of them will be a long run and then a couple of interval sessions. And then if I squeeze in another one in the week, great. So,
and what's long in your terms for training for something like Green Man?
20 and above. Okay. Yeah. So weekly mileage for me in the last few weeks has been 40 to 45 miles. But that's not what I would just do if I didn't have a race coming up. Or if I wasn't training for something, I'd do more like 30, 35 in a week.
And so, interesting you're talking about the Hansen method and the miles your club are putting in. I guess it's this, yeah, how do you make your miles quality miles? I mean, that's the bit, isn't it? Because you can run forever. I guess that bit for most people listening is their lack of understanding, you know, for all of us, of how to make those miles that we're doing worthwhile miles or getting the most from those miles.
I think sounds quite corny, but it's something to do with knowing what you want to get out of a run. So if you go out the door going, it's a sunny day, there's some pretty trails around, I'm just going to do a nice 10 miles, don't care what I'm doing, I'm just going to enjoy the sunshine, and it's just going to be a good for my soul run. Great. Know that's what you're doing. If you know it's a recovery run and it's just about, you know, a few very slow miles, great, do that. If you're doing intervals, go out and mean it. You know, I'm doing intervals, I'm here, I'm in the mind, and I'm going to push as hard as I can. So it's just sort of, yeah, having those different types of runs in your head, I think, and knowing what you're going to do with them.
And how many runs do you do with your club?
Generally 2.
A week.
Train on a Tuesday and a Thursday. Although I've actually started using my third. I don't actually train on a Thursday anymore. I help train our juniors, which for me means trying to keep up with them. And our juniors are insane. So it's a tempo run of about 4 or 5 miles where they will confidently do 6-minute miling. So for me, that's a really hard run. But for them, it's quite good because it means there's an extra adult around watching where they're crossing the roads and that sort of thing.
And do you find those are the runs that you push yourself more on, the runs when you're with your club? Or have you now got to the point where you've developed enough that you can push yourself when you're not with your club, I guess?
I'm not good at pushing myself unless there's a really good reason to push myself. Racing is a good reason to push yourself. Training is a good reason to push yourself with a club. But on my own, I'm not great at it. I'm not that mentally tough, I guess.
See, people will find that surprising, given that you know what you've achieved yesterday. You know, 7:36, 4th fastest woman ever on the Green Man, and I said it was boggy. I can't say what the other conditions were like for the other runs, but it was boggy and things yesterday. So, how do you square that comment you've just made of I don't push myself with?
There's a reason to. I'm really competitive. I really like racing, and I have a bit of a different race gear. Actually, I'm probably quite a lucky person in that I can race harder than I can train, weirdly. I just really enjoy it. I get a massive buzz out of it. I like trying to do as well as I can. So I can push myself in those kind of surroundings. And as I said, with other people, it's much easier. Whereas if I told myself, right, you're going to go out for a hard 10-mile tempo, oh, no, that just doesn't work for me for some reason.
Okay. And so you've run, you've done the Green Man.
Yep.
What's your recovery regime going to be like?
I haven't really thought about that much yet. I'll probably take, I think, 2 weeks off completely because my legs are just tired and I think I'll need that. If I start back much earlier than that, there's a risk that I will just be carrying little niggles and injuries that I didn't realise I had. So yeah, 2 weeks off completely and then gentle back into it, probably 3 or 4.
So you won't run at all for 2 weeks?
No. If I do anything, it'll be other stuff, gym stuff or stretching or rolling, just things like that.
And how much of that do you do, stretching and rolling?
a lot. As Anthony will know, I have had lots of injuries, and I've just learned that I have to do an awful lot of stretching and rolling and all those things that are good for you to keep on top of them. So certainly on a Sunday after I've done my long run, I will do an hour at least of just stretching of varying kinds. After sort of a Tuesday night when I want to get my tea and get into bed, maybe only 10-20 minutes. But after every run, need to do something.
And how much warm-up do you do before you run?
If I'm doing a slow thing, I generally don't do much at all. If I'm doing a fast club run, maybe a mile or two, gentle jog warm-up. Yeah, I think it is important. And you do notice if you haven't done it, if you're going to go from zero to hero, as it were.
So look, you know, Thane and I have got a load of runs coming up this year. I've got Heart of Wales Ultra Marathon. I'm now entered for the Mozart 100 as my Western States qualifier. And Thane has got a raft of big runs coming up this year. I guess you know me, you've followed the podcast, and you know what we've achieved in the last few years. What is your advice, appreciating you're not a professional coach, for Thane and me for the next year?
Do training. I think generally just keep it quite consistent. Keep it quite steady. Don't try to go from zero to hero, because that is how you injure yourself. And I am excellent at going from doing a 20-mile week to doing a 45-mile week and wondering why it really hurt. I've done that lots of times. Don't do that. I think, yeah, just try and get some consistent miles in, and eat right, do lots of stretching. If you get poorly or you get injured, just take the time out that you need.
Which is probably what I didn't do for this race, unfortunately. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff on the Green Man Facebook page this morning of people who've done the 30-miler saying, oh, should I step up to the 45-miler in the summer? I'm interested in your thoughts on that. But my personal thoughts are, if anyone did the 30-miler yesterday, they've probably already got it in them to run a drier 45 in the summer, or especially with the 6 months of training they're going to get in between. But what do you think? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. I think if you managed to do 30 miles yesterday through boggy and at times windy conditions, you'll do 45 in the summer when it'll be dry. It'll be hot, so the times won't necessarily be super quick just because it's dry.
Yeah,
but you'll do it because you evidently got the mental toughness, so you'll get it, you'll get through that.
And I'd like to put a big shout out to Dylan the dog, who was going along with his owner yesterday. There were points yesterday where it was like he was swimming through a swimming pool full of mud. Oh. And the look on his face towards the end was a little bit like, he was doing the 30-miler green boy. Yeah, I've had enough of this now. But he soldiered on massively, and I thought he was absolutely super yesterday. I'm not sure whether he could do the 45. That's a long way for a dog to go.
It is.
And he had little legs.
It is. I was going to say, like, every step you take is at least two dog steps, right?
At least two dog steps. Oh. Four probably for him.
Poor
he had
Dylan.
Little step. But, oh. he was clearly having a great time trying to drag his owner through the gates. She's trying to pull him back. No, you've got to go round the kissing gates. Otherwise, oh. I can't get through. It was quite amusing. And what did you think of the Green Man course?
It's a great course, I have to say. Like, I think you warned me before that some trail runners don't like it as much because there are quite a few road sections. But actually, to someone like me, who does really enjoy racing, those road sections were helpful just to give your legs a bit of a break, get in some good fast miles, navigationally simpler miles when you were on the railway, which just made it, you know, you could break through some of the longer sections quite quickly, which I thought was great. I loved the views. I thought they're brilliant. Seeing the Clifton Suspension Bridge, which I have never seen before, and I was just in awe of that big drop underneath it. I thought that was amazing. And seeing the Severn Bridge as well. Having driven up and down the M5 many times and seen the Severn Bridge from a distance, it was nice to sort of come down a hill and suddenly see it there in front of me. Now, I thought, brilliant course. I'm very much up for it. And as I said, yeah, not too hilly either, so that was good.
Yeah. And did you see the Green Man at the end, did you?
I did see the Green Man. He's not so green. He's sort of brownish.
And did you, what did you do? Did you kiss him?
No.
Did you touch him?
I did touch him. Possibly on the nose.
I think it has to be touched. How important do you think kit is to making you a better runner?
That's tricky. I don't think kit's ever going to make you a better runner, if I'm honest. But I certainly have a few bits of kit that I just love because they make me feel quite nice when I'm using them and when I'm wearing them. Like special bits of kit almost, like my poles that I got for Transvolcania. Always feel good when I'm running with them. Or my arm warmers. They're my favourite bit of kit. And I don't think either of those things make me quicker, but they definitely make me feel good.
I think one of my thoughts is that being properly fitted for trainers or making sure your trainers fit properly and is a way to prevent injury and therefore probably...
Yeah, absolutely. I think the right shoes, primarily it's about the right shoes so you don't get injured, not because they're going to take off 2 seconds every kilometre or whatever. But yeah, ultimately, if you're not getting injured, it means you train, you can train, you can go faster.
So yesterday on the Green Man, intrigued as to what you used to fuel you round the course.
Largely sausage rolls.
Which is interesting because people would think about gels and high calorific sugary foods and specialist running food, and yet you're fueled by Tesco or...
Tesco, but other brands of sausage roll are available.
So I understand.
Yeah, Greg's excellent. The reason I eat proper food as much as possible is because I've done it wrong. I've done it where I've taken like lots of gels, particularly in a road marathon, where you think, right, I'm going to have a gel every 5 miles. And by the time you've got 6 gels in you or whatever, your stomach is absolutely wrecked and you feel horrible. But you definitely can't do that for 30, 45 miles. And having done ultras where they give you real food at aid stations, I realised that my tummy just felt a lot better and I felt a lot better. And yeah, so I eat the things I like. I don't literally only eat sausage rolls. I do always have a stash of sweet things as well for the later miles and peanuts. And basically that's about getting all the right salts in as well to try and keep the cramps at bay. My husband always laughs at me because when I did my first ever ultra, which I hadn't really trained for, but I'd done a marathon that spring, so I thought, well, I'll have a go and do this 50k. I got back from the race, a great big grin on my face, and Neil said, how was it? I said, it was great. At the first aid station, I had crisps and peanuts and some Haribo. At the second aid station, I had a Marmite sandwich followed by some more Haribo. At the third aid station, peanuts. And you get the point. Like he said, was this a run or an all-you-can-eat buffet? So actually, yeah, for me, it's about finding the little things that will cheer me up along the way.
Well, Thane's come out with a line before, and I think he got it from someone else, that an ultramarathon effectively is an eating contest with running in between.
Yeah, picnic with a run.
And I think that the experience is there. You know, if you run these long distances, you can, if you even just miss one feed station or one routine bit of food or don't eat for a bit, you can just feel yourself cliff edge off.
Yes.
I took a gel yesterday with maybe 45 minutes to 50 minutes to go just because I realized that I'd get 20 minutes out of it probably at the end and I needed it. I could feel myself starting to degrade and I decided not to bother eating anymore because they were bubbling in my stomach. But I just realized I was going to probably not get to the end if I didn't manage to have that one gel.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a gel at 5 miles to go as a treat, which is a strange thing to do.
And what's next for Ellie Bates?
So my main race this year, I think, is one I'm doing in November, which is the Wendover Woods 50, which is quite near me and hilly and challenging, and I'm very excited for that.
So your first Centurion run.
My first Centurion run.
I think you'll be impressed with their aid stations and their food and things.
Excellent. That's what I like to hear. So I'm excited for that. So Wendover's quite close to me, so I'll probably try and actually do a fair bit of training around and about the course. I've got a timed event that I'm doing there in May. And I think I've also got one other event booked up in North Yorkshire. But apart from that, I haven't got anything very much planned. So we'll just see how it goes.
And is that how your year tends to go? Do you tend to not plan it much or do you tend to structure it?
I don't tend to structure it much. When I did Transvolcania last year, I did structure my first half of the year very much because it was all about the training for that. So I do tend to think about, and I know you and Thane have spoken about this on the podcast, like A races and B races. And I do tend to think that way. Okay, what's my A race? What's a good B race to do to build up to it? But I also just look out for the things that look like they'll be quite good fun.
And just to go on to Transylvania for a second, just because I think it shows how the same race on a different day and different weather can make a massive difference. In that, in the nicest way, you are clearly a better runner than I am, yet I finished Transylvania quicker than you did, but on a different year and in different conditions. And I think that the point for that is that people, when they're running, should not focus on what results have been in the past and focus on what happens on the day and in their race and with the people they're running with. I think you can, if you're not careful, beat yourself up too much about your result on a day in terms of times compared to other people. I don't, I'm guilty of that. I know I am. Because you came much higher up the field in Transylvania 2019 than I did in 2017. Yeah, my time was quicker. And I think, yeah, there's a point to remember that this is not a track race.
No. And I think it's something I always think about. There's been races which I've done well at and which I've won, smaller races, not Transvolcania, I hasten to add. And I think, goodness gracious, I should not have won that race. I have no right to have won that race. But the fact is that you turn up on the day and you race against the people who are there on the conditions of that day. And if you come out on top, great. So I think it's always just about, yeah, you can't count 1 year against another or one race against another, because it's just about who's there and what it's like on the day. And yes, it was very hot. Very, very hot. All the locals said it was very, very hot. So I decided I wasn't just being wussy in English, and it was very, very hot.
But on that note, and bringing it back to yesterday, Ellie Bates, Green Man Ultra 2020 Women's Winner. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And thanks very much for appearing on Runners on Trail.
So look, that was Ellie. And now let's have a listen to what Gary Robbins had to say about it in 2018.
The trail running podcast I do is for mid-pack runners.
Yeah, so, which I love. I think that's fantastic.
If you had to give one piece of advice to a mid-pack runner on how they can improve, how they can get better, I know that's a very general question.
Yeah.
But what do you think advice you could give to a mid-pack runner to try and make themselves a better, whatever term that is, runner?
It's tough to throw out one particular piece of advice, especially because we're coming straight out of the pub at this exact moment. But, but no, you know, first thing off the top of my head really is, I also work as a coach on top of the event directing side of things. And I think a couple of things from the coaching perspective is that people struggle with consistency, and consistency goes a very long ways. And on the opposite end of that spectrum is some people struggle with actually taking the days off necessary. So rest and recovery is a very big element of being able to recover and get the most out of yourself. But there's a lot to be said about the consistency of running, and whether that's even just like 20 or 30 minutes kind of thing, or depending on what your lifestyle allows for. But it's tough to pull off these events if you're only able to squeeze stuff in on the weekends. And if you're getting the weekend stuff in the long back-to-backs, you know, just adding in a little bit more consistency throughout the week with shorter runs really pays dividends.
So look, those were the thoughts of Ellie and Gary Robbins on how a mid-packer can make themselves a better runner. And the big thing that I think that comes across from both of them is consistency in running.
And in the running training, I guess, approach to how you...
Yeah, you know, it's getting out there, getting consistent runs in, and not just the run at the weekends. You got to put a little bit of extra time into it. As Gary said, even if you're just going out and doing a couple of other half-hour runs a week, other than your long weekend runs, it's really going to help you improve as a runner.
Mm.
And Ellie's point, of course, was, you know, it was, I think, was about doing that, but also building in a lot of different styles of running. And that's something that I've experienced lately. I signed up with a coaching team, Tom and Rachel, who run a coaching setup called Run Namaste Eat, and they put together a structured training program for me. It's done remotely. I talk to them on a regular basis, but what struck me is the sheer variety in different styles of running and types of running I'm doing that I would never have done before. I'd have just gone out and done a jog. And even if I'd done a little bit of sprint training, it wouldn't be like as disciplined and set as it is.
So when you say different running styles, it's more of the not the way in which you're running necessarily. It's more the pace and the distances and that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's not just going out and doing an easy run and then just going out and doing a fast run of the same distance. It's,
yes.
It's all the hill work. It's the fartleks. It's what they call progression runs. It's all that sort of stuff in a structured way. A lot of which appears to be around, I think, some of it at least, pushing and stretching yourself. And I think what I got from Ellie was that being part of a club for her, and I guess the same for me of having coaches, is it makes you do stuff outside of your comfort zone. You can't be comfortable. You get forced into doing things that push you.
Yes. Completely agree. And it's something which certainly on a personal level, I know you've through your training now and going through this coaching, you've really seen the benefits from taking that kind of approach. And it's something I've considered before with a kind of a running coach. I have a trainer for kind of strength training, but I don't have a running coach. I have looked at it. I approached somebody before. There's obviously the financial element as well that comes into that. And I've not made that kind of that leap and that commitment at this time. Although when we were doing Transvolcania, I did join the local Bristol running club, athletics club.
That's right.
And I was the person at the back pretty much, but being pushed, I was definitely being pushed all the time. And I got, you know, for me, what I thought was a good result at Transvolcania that I probably wouldn't have been able to match subsequent to that, because I wasn't in that environment where someone was saying, right, now you're going to do this. Now you're going to run flat out for 5 minutes. You're going to stop for 50 seconds. And now you're going to run flat out again and tough luck. And that kind of embarrassment of shame of not doing it. You know, you don't push yourself that hard if you're just doing it yourself.
No. But I think if someone even doesn't want to join a running club or get a coach, what we did in Transvolcania, and we've not really done it since for a variety of reasons, none of them bad, is we ran together a lot.
Yes.
And went and trained together a lot.
Mm.
And I can remember those times running up and down Bridge Valley Road in Bristol where I get sort of 5 or 6 reps in out of 20 and go, oh, do you know what? Should we just call it a day at 10? And you go, no. Come on,
we're doing the
20.
And then we get to sort of 12
or 13 and you go, actually, shall we call it a day? And at that point, I've got my second win. If I go, no, we're going to do the 20. And, you know, we would have wrapped earlier if we hadn't been there pushing each other. So I don't think it's just about having a coach there necessarily. My wife quite often would give me a nudge at 5 o'clock in the morning. I go, oh, I can't be bothered to go and do this training run. She'd go, get out and get running.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a massive race coming up.
Mm.
You've got to get it done. And that's when you just need that person. I think, don't get me wrong, that a running club and coaches are brilliant.
Mm.
I absolutely do.
Yeah.
But don't think you have to take that big leap.
Mm.
But get someone who's going to push you.
Yeah. And one of my motivations has always been entering the race itself. So having races coming up in your diary force me to think, oh my God, I've got this coming up. I must start training now, otherwise I'll be in trouble.
Well, and as Ellie said, you know, that for her is something she works with. Those A and B races that we've talked about before are really key to some people's motivation. Although I know some people for whom the training's really much more important than the race.
Yeah, absolutely.
They enjoy the training much more, you know, than they actually enjoy necessarily the races.
Yeah, I know people who just can't help but want to run all the time. They love it for the sake of just getting out there and doing a run.
Yeah.
I'm not that person, but
I think I am, although interestingly with the coaching setup, being pushed as hard as I am, I'm enjoying my recovery days much more than I used to. My days off now, I look forward to them, not because I don't want to run, but just because I feel tired and my legs feel tired.
Yes.
And I don't mind taking a day off from running anymore because
You've done the work, haven't you?
Because I know I've done the work in the other days. Yeah. And I know that I'll do better work on the subsequent days if I take that day off.
And does it help with you've got a coach actively telling you as well that you need those rest days? Those rest days are effectively training days as well.
Because
that's when the body rebuilds itself. And having someone tell you that is important.
Yeah. And I think it is having a positive effect. But I haven't raced, really.
I know.
Well, apart from the Green Man. But I'd been so ill.
Yes.
We'd had to cut back the training so much that I'm not going to take that as having an effect. We'll see come the next race.
Post-COVID, post-lockdown.
Yeah, whether it really does have an effect.
Yeah.
The thing about all of that, though, is about having the coaches and being pushed and everything else, is you do occasionally do things that you wouldn't want to do and you don't necessarily... I'll use the term enjoy, for want of a better term, Because there are runs that I do sometimes and go, that was just not pleasant. But that doesn't mean I didn't necessarily enjoy it, even though it was slightly unpleasant to do. Because I get to the end of it and think, do you know what? I did quite well, even though it was horrible while I was doing it.
Yeah.
And conversely, there'll be runs I do that I enjoy probably where I don't run so well. But I do think that you've got to do what you enjoy, unless something else is motivating you. I'm paying for coaching, and therefore I'm going to do what the coach tells me.
Yes.
But you're unlikely to go out and do, you know, 10 massive hill reps on a weekend unless you're motivated to do it for some reason. And that probably means you enjoy it, or you have some other motivational factor that pushes you to do it.
And I guess there's something which could kick in on the other side if you're doing a run which you don't enjoy, or the weather turns bad, or, you know, it's worse than you thought it was going to be. There's always that flip side of thinking of it as putting cookies in the cookie jar.
Yeah.
Because as we know, in races and in long races, probability is you're more likely to come into those circumstances. You can always trade on that previous experience of, hey, I've been in difficult positions, I've been out and it was worse than I expected it to be, I've been in torrential rain. So is that, you know, you can think of it then in that perspective, maybe.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think you're right. Coming back to the recovery bit as well, as well as taking those recovery days to make sure you get the most out of your training, there's also the bit where you have to take the time off if you get ill or injured.
Yes.
And trying to come back too early is a mistake. And I think it's fair to say that over the last year, you've probably tried to come back too early from injury.
Yeah,
when you have come back.
I thought it was too late, but in hindsight, it was probably too early. Misdiagnosis or whatever on my part, really. I don't know what my injury was, or a couple of injuries. But yes, no, coming back too early will only set you back further.
Yeah. And Green Man this year, I said I think I came back too early, having been ill. That said, when you've entered a race where you need, kind of needed to do it, otherwise the summer race kind of went out the window as well. It's difficult.
And I guess now, with knowing now as we do that lockdown was have happened, you're probably glad that you did do it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's the benefit of hindsight, obviously. But
yeah, I guess one of the other bit about training is about getting it right and making sure that you do the right thing in training. And I think it's something that I hadn't really thought of too much before. It's hydration and fueling. I think about them for racing, but I'm not sure I think about them for training, or did think about them for training so much. And I think there's a tendency on a lot of us, even if we're going out for a long run, to go out potentially without any water bottles and without any fuel, maybe first thing in the morning when we haven't had something to eat, and then coming back and not necessarily doing a post-run recovery as much as we should. And there is that bit of your training. To get the most out of your training, you need to be properly fueled and properly hydrated. And to make sure your body recovers quickly when you get back, you need to be doing what you need to be doing, protein shakes or whatever else.
Yeah, and get used to taking on liquid whilst you're running.
And race food, exactly. Yeah. So there is a part of training that's about training you for the race where you've got to keep eating. But there's also just that bit of making sure you've got fuel in your body when you go training. But my experience of seeing everyone out at the weekend is I don't see very many people at all with water bottles in their hands.
No.
Certainly people with fuel on them. And I think if you're going to go out and do a two-hour run, you definitely need hydration on you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm as guilty as everyone else. If I'm going and just doing a six-miler, then I probably wouldn't have taken water with me.
No, and I probably don't.
But, yeah, certainly anything longer than that, anything over an hour.
Anything over an hour, I think,
yeah,
you need to start thinking about taking water with you, or a hydration drink of some kind.
Yeah.
But definitely water is a minimum. And then, yeah, if you're starting to do it long, make sure you get some fuel in you before you go out. And if you don't think that's going to last, then take something to eat while you're going. Otherwise, you're not going to maximise your training.
No, no. I know there is that thing where you can train on an empty stomach because of a specific reason, but that's not just a general rule. That's a specific case.
Correct. So we talked about consistency, variety, we've said it, making sure you do not just going out and doing the same pace on the same run all the time. You need to mix it up. Certainly before I started my coaching thing, most of my runs were too quick.
Yeah.
I'm now running a lot more runs at a slower pace with certain speed intervals in them at certain points, potentially. But overall, most of my runs are easy runs. They're not hard.
So was your coach, do they push that kind of average that 80% of your runs should be easy and 20% should be hard as a general kind of
rule? I don't think they voiced it in those sort of specific terms, but if I think about what my training looks like, then yes, it's about that. I guess.
Mm.
Yeah, it's probably about that.
Because my hunch is that 80% of runners aren't actually doing that. Most people are going out and doing the same pace every single time.
Yeah.
Or going faster than they should do every single time. And of course, we all know people personally who go out and hammer it every single time. And it's like, if it's not been a hard run, I've not gained benefit from it. But really, the evidence is contrary to that.
Absolutely.
There was a time and a place. And the development in your body doesn't just happen in those times. It mostly happens at times when you're running at far easier pace.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's the same I remember from rock climbing years when I used to do it, you know, a long time ago. It's like a lot of the adaption happens at low intensity levels. You get better capillary growth and all that kind of thing and blood supply, and that happens at lower. It doesn't happen at the high end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So different sport, but same approach.
I'm not sure if that bird agrees with you or doesn't agree with you.
Or that one.
So look, we've talked about training.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about racing. Now, not all of us are as gifted as Ellie and can literally press the turbo boost button when it comes to racing and just find that extra gear that thrashes them to the front. If you saw the photos of her doing the Green Man, she's literally smiling and bouncing around the whole time.
In fact, all the photos I've ever seen of her on like Strava or through previous races, she's always got a massive smile on her face.
Yeah, I mean, we love her running, but she genuinely just seems happy the entire time. It's great. And look, what did she say? You know, as far as she's concerned, she never looks at her pace at all when she's running.
Yeah.
And she runs as fast as she thinks she can reasonably sustain for the race.
Hmm.
And it's something I've now started to do. You know, you got on your GPS, you can have sort of so many fields displayed of different things. Well, yeah. I'm now down to one, and that's how long I've been running.
Yeah.
That's all I have on my GPS. So I don't have distance or anything when I'm training. Now, when I'm racing, I probably will end up having distance put back on there because it's nice to know how far through a race you are.
Hmm.
But when it comes to training, I've stopped doing that because my training regime with my coaches is all perception-based, how I'm feeling. So when I run an easy run, I have to run what I think is an easy pace.
Yes.
And when it's a hard run, it's what I think is a hard pace.
So is that based then on your GPS or based on your pulse rate or your speed?
Just based on how I feel.
So you're not using any of the...
I'm not using anything. It's
right.
Just on how you feel, which is interesting because my coaches can sometimes tell when people are getting ill because they can see their performance dropping off for what people perceive as the same amount of effort.
Yeah.
So those sort of things are interesting. And I still get as good training effort if I run tomorrow slower than I did today, but put the same amount of effort in.
Yes.
I took pace off of my GPS, so I wasn't running to a pace. But you can't help it. As you run along with time and mileage on it, you just start doing the maths in your head.
And probably knowing your local areas, you kind of fall into kind of a, I guess, mental clock grooves.
And you do have that a little bit. So, you know, if you've got set routes, you know how long it takes you to run bits and pieces.
Yeah.
But when I'm out running, I don't tend to have markers of those. It's only when I get to the end I know if I've run quicker or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, so as Ellie said, you know, as she said, make hay while the sun shines. If you're feeling good, go for it. And, you know, let your body go a bit. It doesn't mean thrash yourself to bits, but it means, you know, run well when you can run well. And as we've talked about before, she said, when the going gets tough, the tough get plodding. Or, you know, sometimes you just got to consolidate.
Yeah.
You've got to slow down. We both found that in Transvulcania. There's bits where you just have to dig deep, go slower, and get better, and then it'll come back to you. And that happened for me in this Green Man eventually, but it almost took me an entire aid station.
So how was your race?
Not very good. As I said, the first 15 miles felt right, and then my legs just went completely.
Mm.
And it took me about another 15 miles.
And do you think that was your legs and weak in strength? Was it food intake or was it just generally being run down?
I think I was just run down. So, and I was running to pace. So I was running to a certain pace and I think I pushed my body too hard.
Okay, you were running to a time.
A time on my GPS, yeah. I knew exactly when I wanted to be at each aid station and I made myself go that quick, which probably wasn't the best strategy.
Mm.
And then, it went horribly wrong.
Not, I mean, as well,
horribly
as
wrong. Well, no, yeah, but in that, you know, I there were a couple of times in that first bit from aid station 2 to 3 where I was sitting down and all the 30 mile starters start at a aid station two, and they started a minute after I left it.
Mm.
So they're all coming past me, and then I sort of stopping and walking and sitting down. People are stopping me going, "Are you okay?"
Mm.
I was doing a lot of retching.
Okay.
In the latter stages, it was just not particularly pretty.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't feel good.
Mm.
I felt unwell, and potentially should have stopped, but I didn't. and if Ellie hadn't been running, I might well have dropped.
Yeah.
I thought about that during the race.
Mm.
I can remember. I'm thinking, no, there's no way I can embarrass myself with like Ellie Bates running.
So you had your own pressure in there.
Well, you know, as I said, you know, I respect her hugely as a runner.
Mm.
And yeah, clearly she's not a pro and she's not super famous. But in my head, you know, I build her up to be that good.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it would be like going running in a race with Gary Robbins and he's come to your house and you pull out halfway through. You're just not going to do it. You're going to run to the end. And so having her there pushed me on, which is great. But yeah, I think you have to push on and consolidate and do whatever. And as she said, you've got to be prepared though to be uncomfortable. If you want to be a better runner, you're not going to get that by running in your comfort zone, especially in races.
Yeah,
you've got to push yourself. It's, you know, it's going to hurt. You know, all these Olympic athletes and everyone else, when they get their PBs, they get them because they pushed themselves.
Yeah,
they've made it hurt.
Mm.
And as she said, be a bit arrogant, be a bit bolshy. You've put all the training in. You've got yourself ready. Be arrogant enough to say, I can do this. I'm going to push myself harder. This is what it's for. This is what all the training's for.
Yeah.
You know, be positive.
I think that's definitely paid off in a couple of races in particular. One was Transvolcania, because as we've said already, we collectively did that training together. We had invested a lot of time and a lot of commitment and put many hours down. And we'd even been on the course and done the whole course as a recce. We had kind of invested that time where it was like, almost like the race owes me now. I've done it. You know, I've invested so much. And I invested a similar amount for the spine race, gone up in the mountains on my own, tested, pushed myself. I'd done the summer race and things like that. It was almost like that kind of confidence of, no, I'm going to, you know, it almost becomes like a not self-fulfilling prophecy that you're going to finish, but it's almost that kind of like, come on, you know, you can do this. You've done it. It's kind of almost owed to you in a way, or that kind of, it's a little bit of arrogance with it, I guess. But maybe if you're going to races where you've not really invested, and we've talked about this before, you've not necessarily done enough prep, you've not quite done the right things, you've not treated the course with the respect, or then that's another way in which you don't have the confidence or the bullishness, and it kind of potentially there's a higher probability that it unravels for some reason.
I think so. And I think you're right. The bit you've just mentioned there is the level of commitment you've put into it. You know, if you don't put a lot of commitment into something and you've not invested enough in it, what's the saying? You know, you never value something that you get for free.
Yeah.
And so, or conversely, you value things that you spent more money on, probably, because, or put more time into because of that.
Mm.
There's so much of you invested in it.
Yes.
And therefore, as you said, you're determined to do well. So, and I think then that comes back to the training. If you train properly and you train hard, you probably will race better, because you don't want to turn around and say, you know, all those cold, wet winter months where you were trudging over the hills, to then have done all of those to then pull out of a race.
Yes.
You won't. You won't let yourself.
Yeah.
So as you said, whether it's arrogance, bolshiness, confidence, or just sheer bloody mindedness, I think, that those two are quite well tied together.
Yeah, and maybe that's more, you know, more important for people who are mid-pack runners. You know, if you are a good runner, you're an elite runner all the time, then you can kind of, not saying get away with it, but you can always finish and stuff. Whereas if you're a mid-pack runner, it's always, you've got a lot of these races, it's touch and go.
Well, I think more than that, I think when you see some of the elite runners pulling out races, they're doing it because they don't feel that great, and they're racing again in a few weeks' time.
Yes,
for a lot
true.
Of people, they'll run an ultra or maybe a couple of ultras or one race a year or two races a year, but that's it.
Mm.
This is their chance. This is their moment.
Yes.
You know, if you don't take that moment, when's your next moment going to be?
Mm.
So you want to, get the most out of it you can. And don't get me wrong, we've both DNF'd races, and I don't regret for one second the race I DNF'd of DNFing it. Because nothing was going right. It didn't feel right. But all of those things we've just talked about, you know, I hadn't invested mentally in the race. I was invested mentally in work at that point.
Yes.
And so actually it didn't feel like a loss when I stepped away from it. Not really.
Mm.
Whereas some of the other ones really would have felt like a loss if I'd stepped away from them. And things like Squamish, especially, I didn't go onto that on the back of a great training block, but there was no way. I'd invested over many thousands of pounds taking my family across to Canada for 2 weeks. There was no way I wasn't going to do it. There's that bit then, having done your hard race and been bolty and pushed yourself and done your bit, that we get back to recovery again. Not recovery from your training runs, but in giving yourself that little bit of a pause after a race to let your body sort itself out. Because if you have pushed yourself that hard, if you have made yourself uncomfortable,
yeah,
you'll have done some damage to your body. Even if it's a half marathon, you'll have got all those micro tears and everything else. And Ellie said in the interview I did with her, oh, I'm not going to run for 2 weeks. Yeah. Liar, liar, pants on fire, Ellie. She was back running about a week later. She said she just couldn't wait any longer. She wanted to get out. But she did take it very easy and ran very light. And I do think there's that bit about, it's not just about training recovery. You've got to do a bit of decent post-race recovery too.
Yeah, yeah. One other thing I'll just like mention in passing is, as you know, I'm not running at the moment. I've decided actually I need to, the impact on my cartilage might be causing the problems, and it's not just not quite healing to finish it off. So I've actually started doing a lot of cycling, and I'm feeling loads of benefits from doing that. You know, it's that cross training aspect. You know, if you can't do running or whatever your sport is, then try something different where you're going to relieve the pressure on the area. And a few people recommended it, and I thought, yeah, you know what, I'm going to do that. I'm still getting the benefit of working hard. I'm still getting the benefit of, you know, working my body and losing weight and getting fitter, and I'm still exercising my muscles. It's not quite the same muscle set and dynamic, but there's so many more benefits that I'm achieving like 70-80% of what I need, but doing it in a different medium. And the 20% I'm not doing is a bit I'm actually recovering from still. Do you know what I mean? So it's not, sometimes in these other lull periods, there might be another way of approaching it to keep that consistency.
I absolutely agree. And I think it comes back to the two bits we talked about earlier, which is variety. It doesn't just have to be variety in your running and keeping it enjoyable. And we've said before in other episodes, you know, if you're a runner but you also play rugby, don't feel guilty about not doing a running session and going and doing a rugby training session instead, because it will keep it fresh for you, and you won't then resent the running because you're doing the other things you love. And I think the cycling's been brilliant for you, and I think the biggest thing that I've seen the difference in, of course, is not how much fitter you're doing everything else, but just how much happier you seem now that you're able to do some regular exercise. An exercise where I think you feel, and because I can't say whether it really isn't, but you definitely feel it's having a positive effect on your health.
Yes,
and on your fitness.
Yeah.
So it's not just exercise for exercise's sake. It's exercise that's doing something that's worthwhile.
Yeah, and I can see myself. I mean, one of the advantages of cycling is it's all power meter driven, all the rest of it. You can see visually instantly. Whereas you kind of get that in running, but it's a bit more bit difficult.
No, in the cycling thing, you can see how many watts you're putting out.
Exactly.
Can't
so you can absolutely see the benefits. And I'm doing that through Zwift online, which I used to do on the treadmill, but I'm now doing it on the cycling. And there's a challenge I've taken over to do all the 67 routes and stuff. So I've got this thing now, and that's my kind of almost like, it might have started a bit late, but that's become my lockdown kind of challenge.
Go and do a HIIT session, you know, go and do, I don't know, something else, body pump, go and do anything, because there's great benefit in sort of strength and mobility training as well.
Yeah.
You know, introduce all of that, if you want to, into your training scenario, you will benefit from all of it. We talked about nutrition for training, and as you'll have heard, when it comes to nutrition in a race, Ellie Bates is not the most professional of people necessarily, you know. Fueled by sausage rolls is what we're going for. She's certainly not onto a sort of specific liquid sugar based diet. But the important thing there that we've learned so many times, and that I beat you up on for a regular basis, you've now got much better at, is you've just got to get food inside you on an ultra distance race, or even on a half marathon, you want to be fueling yourself, but you've got to get it into you. And so, as Ellie said, you know, gels, things like that, don't really, she does use them, but she can't use them exclusively and stuff in a race.
It's a point at which they'll kind of start to turn on you.
Yeah. And they turned on me a little bit in this one, the last one, which is unusual because I can normally stick gels down till the cows come home. But yes, important to eat, and just, you know, anything you can eat will be better than not eating.
Yes.
I guess. Can keep down, but it's important. And starting it early. If you want to run your race well, we said it before, but start your nutrition early because that's really good. And the same with hydration. You've got to keep doing it all the way to the finish.
Yeah.
Don't stop, because also post-race recovery starts during the race.
Yes.
If you're dehydrated by the time you get to the finish, you're already on the back foot when it comes to post-race recovery.
No one wants to be in that position.
I guess one of the last things I wanted to talk about today, briefly, because I asked Ellie about it, is kit. And I asked her, can kit make you a better runner? And I liked her reply, because I think it's how I feel too, in that probably kit, in its physical sense, doesn't make you that much of a better runner, most of it. You know, she likes her poles, and she likes her arm warmers. And I love my running vest, because I know where everything is in it. And I think it makes me a better runner, and we've talked about this before, is because it takes some of the uncertainty out of stuff for me. I know what I'm going for every time, and know where everything is. I know it's nice and light, and I bought myself some new lightweight bits of kit, and they just make me feel more confident.
Yes. It's a confidence thing, isn't it, I think? Yeah. But there is that bit about kit, which we're kind of saying, which I think both of you made the point about, which is you can get it wrong, especially, for example, and I think the example you used was in footwear, etc. Clearly, there are some areas where it's quite critical.
I think having a set of trainers that are right for you for that race, and there's not one pair of trainers that does for every trail race, you know, same as there aren't for life. And we've said before, and I've said before, I think at least once in your life, but fairly regularly, you want to go to a proper running shop and have a gait analysis and have them fit your trainers. If you want to buy another pair from online later, well, you know, you can make that decision. But if you're just buying trainers online or from Sports Direct, I don't think you're going to get the best from yourself, just because I don't think you'll run as well. You'll be injured, or you won't suit your style as right, or you won't have the right level of cushioning and comfort. And running shops are there to help you with that. So I think that's important. But other than that, I think mostly, if it's like everything else that we talked about here, and the nutrition, if it makes you feel happy and confident, then you're probably going to run that way. And that's how you want to be in a race.
Yeah.
And I think, as mid-packers, that's one of the things that I think I see and hear and feel from a lot of us in races, is being nervous. And when you walk around the start of a race, you don't see lots of people with beaming smiles on their faces. You see a lot of straight faces and people going stuff, thinking about stuff in their head. And that's why races like Transvulcania are brilliant. You know, that hour we've stood on that start line, I don't think we stopped smiling, and everyone's bouncing and chatting, and it's just a really great atmosphere, and you didn't have a chance to sit there and go all inward and start worrying about it. You were just having a great time.
Yes.
And I think we all need to approach our races with much more of, I'm here because I want to be here. Let's have a big smile on my face, rather than I'm terrified about what's about to happen to me.
Yes. Yeah.
So look, those are our thoughts, but really more importantly, the thoughts of two very good runners.
Yes.
On how a midpacker can become a better runner, and little things you can think about. And I think it's stuff that we probably all know, but when you hear it from the likes of Ellie and Gary Robbins, it has more credibility.
Yes. And certainly speaking personally, I know that there's areas in there which I know I should be concentrating on where I haven't been, you know, the consistency and things like that.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. Please do subscribe. And of course, you can reach out to us if you want to on social media, on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Runners on Trail.
And you can email us at runnersontrail@gmail.com.
Well done.
Just
about got that out. Epic. You have no idea how hard Thane finds it to remember our email address.
I'm not a big social media person.
Well,
despite doing a podcast.
I mean, we've only been doing the podcast, 2 years? I mean, how difficult can it be to remember an email address? 3 years? 3 years.
My word.
So yeah, we've got some other episodes that we've already started thinking about in the future. One of which is the ethics of trail running. And another one on what makes a good trail race. So feel free to send us anything you like on those, and we'll hopefully included in a future podcast. And if there's any other episodes you want us to make, then please feel free to ping us something on social media or by email.
And we've still got a backlog of races, but we're not quite sure whether we'll get through those. We might do a smash up of trail clips somewhere along the lines.
Hope you're all safe. Hope you're keeping well. And we'll be back soon. Maybe. Might be a bit later. Soon. It's all relative, isn't it?
Runners on Trail.